Hi, this is Blog Talk Radio,
and I'm Russell, and we have Gillian Green, if you will, the last name, and she's a clairvoyant, and she's been around a long, long time teaching us how to behave and get ready for ascension and all of that. But could you just take a minute or two and talk about your experiences and talk about your history just a little bit, Gillian? Can you hear me? Hello? Did we lose you? I see you're still there. Anyway, let me do this. I have some information, too, about your partner who has crossed over. And George Green, he says this. She was married to George Green, and he has this to say.
On Good Morning America. No, but it's just showing that there is conscious, and
we
know that. I mean, it's
animals.
Chris Birds with the when he did his stuff on the talking to the plants. You know, that ET group down in Brazil that were plants, look like humans, but chlorophyll-based.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got that salve. I still have that information for curing cancer. And so, you know, the game becomes very, you know, just exploring. I love the exploration of what the universe is all about. I'd be glad to, you know, take off and go to other planets and explore and do things. But that's not my job at this point, is to try to awaken and save the remnant. Does it look good? No. But I'm going to keep trying and say I'm not failing because I'm doing my job.
You definitely are doing your job, George Green.
Well, is it going fast enough? Maybe.
What about? Let me ask you one thing about the time in Atlantis. Sorry, have you been told anything about, you know, that we've been through this again,
yes,
in the past as an Earth and as a people?
Sure. My wife, who's a clairvoyant, remembers the total time of Atlantis and Lemuria.
And when they went from Atlantis and the destruction of Atlantis,
all of
and
that.
They
she
went
can
to
tell
Egypt.
You all, yeah, she can tell you the whole thing and who was in charge and how it all happened, and we're going to go through the same thing.
Okay.
But there's something to look at. It's okay to look back. Don't stare.
Okay, that's interesting, yeah.
No, seriously. Because
right.
You can get caught up in what is there. And remember what I told you in the beginning. The only thing that exists is right now.
Hey, Jillian, you have...
Yes,
you
can
and,
you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You were in Atlantis.
Oh, good. Good. Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's
and
talk about
that.
That
was my dear George. That was my dear George, and I miss him greatly. So it was good. It was good to hear him speaking there. And what he was saying was absolutely true, that we are going through the same kind of thing again. I was just talking about this recently to a friend, that this is like Atlantis replayed. We're having a replay of Atlantis. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah, talk right into your microphone there, your telephone. Could you do that?
Oh, am I not doing that?
It's a little low for some reason. It was
okay. Is that better?
No. Are you talking right into the microphone there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, that's all right. We'll compensate then. So let's. It was just a little higher before, but that's right. Let's talk then. Let's go. What he was saying, that you have been to Atlantis. That means, clairvoyant, you back here.
No, I lived in Atlantis.
You lived there?
I lived in Atlantis, yes. At the time I was in Atlantis, my name was, coincidentally, Atalanta. That was my name, Atalanta. And I was killed in the fall of Atlantis.
I see. So you're saying that you have been here before on this planet Earth?
Many times. Many times.
How many times?
Oh, I honestly can't remember all of them. I've had at the Atlantis, of course, was one time. And then I returned from that history about several hundred thousand years ago, and became a member, physically a member of the Anunnaki group. They kind of adopted me. I was born into them. And then I came to Earth. So that would have been about that last time I came to Earth. after I'd been reborn to the Anunnaki was about 15,000 Earth years ago. And I was several thousand years old by then in Anunnaki terms, but it was about 15,000 Earth years ago. It was just at the end of an ice age. And then I was killed again about 5,000 years ago down in what is now Peru. And that was unfortunate because that was just at the time the Anunnaki were planning on leaving the planet. And I, and many others, not just me, I'm sure there were many, we got left behind. And so we have been waiting patiently, reincarnating on Earth in multiple reincarnational lives here as normal, as, you know, you what you think of as normal Earth human. But we're all human. We're all the Anunnaki are human, all the extraterrestrial beings throughout the universe, except the reptilians, of course, are, I want to say 98% of them are normal humans. I noticed something George said. He was speaking about the group down in Brazil who were like plants. They were highly evolved plants, but they looked like humans. Well, they were humans, but they had a different physiology. Now, the Anunnaki have a slightly different physiology in that their blood is literally blue-green blood because their base metal carrying the nutrients to their blood is copper, where ours is iron. We have iron carrying oxygen and nutrients throughout our system. The Anunnaki have copper. So that's the kind of variations you get throughout the human species and throughout the whole universe. Depending on environment, they have different chemical compound makeups, but essentially they are all human. They might look very different or they might look very similar, but they are human species and they're spread all over the cosmos. And in fact, anybody not actually living on planet Earth is by definition an extraterrestrial, as indeed all the great beings who've ever come to this planet to teach us, you know, beings like Christ himself, extraterrestrials coming here for a purpose, coming here to teach those who are Earth humans living on planet Earth as an evolving species. And this is true throughout the cosmos.
You mentioned Jesus in the Bible.
Yeah.
Was he an Anunnaki? Was he an alien?
He's extraterrestrial. Alien as a word.
Okay.
Generally means something different, right? And extraterrestrials are not necessarily different because they're all human. They might present differently, but they're all humans. So if you think of extraterrestrials as being mostly humans, but there are some aliens. So for instance, I would classify the reptilians as alien, meaning they're strange, they're different, they're not like us. On the other hand, those from Vesuvius or those from Sirius, the Pleiadians from Sirius or from Arcturus, all those, though they look a little different in coloration or whatever, right? They maybe have some variants, number of fingers or toes, things like that. Still, they are all humans. They are not alien to us. They are the same as us with some variations in the same way that we have many variations of Earth humans on this planet, different colors, different shapes, you know, but we're all Earth humans, right? It's the same throughout the cosmos. So aliens, in my mind, when I say alien, I mean something different like the reptilians because they are nothing like humans. There is nothing human about them.
All
even
right,
though
well,
they may look, yeah, go on.
Can't they shapeshift and look human?
Yes, I was going to say, even though they can make themselves look like us, they are not like us. no matter how much they imitate humans, they are not human. They are alien and very different to us, with a completely different set of values.
All right. You know, in terms of looking at the history of extraterrestrials, going back many, many years, if we were to go back to 1947, July 16th, I believe it was, July 1 of 1947, when the Roswell,
yeah.
Yeah.
Roswell.
So they were grays, the people in that spaceship that crashed. Were they not?
I don't know who they were.
I don't know.
I mean, I know there were two little people because George had the photos of them.
Right.
But who they were, I personally do not know.
Yeah, many books, many, they keep calling them the grays. But let's go back to the, here's the question. When people are talking about the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, particularly 70s, there were a lot of abduction and a lot of abduction cases, and then many books above Top Secret and many other books that talk to Area 51. Why were people abducted over the many, many years? Why did they come to this planet?
Okay.
And, go ahead.
Okay. I would say that these abductions have been going on for hundreds or possibly thousands of years. They are not a new thing. And they are primarily to do with a different species wanting something from planet Earth, either just plain research, understanding of the species on this planet through experimentation, or wanting themselves to be able to live on this planet and trying to develop hybrid species by producing offspring with Earth humans. So there have always been many, many reasons why these abductions took place in the first place. And they were usually done in conjunction with the Earth governments, going way back to tribal days, you know, when the tribal chief allowed somebody to be snatched and in exchange for good hunting grounds or whatever. It's always been an exchange. The governments, the ruling bodies throughout history, have always got something from these extraterrestrial beings who were doing the abducting. So that has always been an exchange. And it's no more the fault or the blame of the extraterrestrials than it is the fault or the blame of the governments in charge. It was an equal exchange, and everybody knew what they were doing, right? So, you know, if you want to blame somebody, blame your government, because they were allowing these abductions to take place. Now, there are also the abductions that are going on by the governments themselves around the planet. Of course, in modern times, it's always been an exchange for technology. And a lot of that technology has involved altering people, like making super soldiers, things like this, pharmacology. Big Pharma has a huge part to play in the development of the military-industrial complex, as you know. And some of this abduction was done by the governments themselves. They simply took people and experimented on them. Also, a lot of the experimentation since World War II, since the Roswell incident, if you like, has drilled beings living on this planet in various locations, like the Pleiadians, who have a huge base, I understand, under the Antarctic, or other beings living out of sight, and they were doing abductions for experimental purposes. Now, I know the Pleiadians were doing it. When I was quite young, I inadvertently had an interaction with them for a couple of years before I realized what they were up to. They really, really conned me. And so I've been very skeptical of all extraterrestrials ever since, right? They have to definitely identify themselves. But they were taking people. And those ships that you see, like the one pictured at Roswell, the saucer, if you like, the flying saucers that we all began to hear about in the 50s and 60s that were, you know, so popular. These are not spaceships. These are only usable in the confines of the system that we're already in. These ships cannot go out. They can come out of the Earth and fly around the planet and do all their high-speed tricks and everything that they can do, but they are really no more than landing craft. If you saw a spaceship would have maybe a dozen of these on board for the purpose of coming down to a planet. They are simply not spaceships, but they have been identified and called spaceships for years now, and that's a misnomer. It's not true. And so the extraterrestrials who have that technology to both build and fly those ships are, in fact, living on our planet and have been for a very long time. And I think I mentioned to you some time ago, Russell, about the books written by Dr. Michael Sala, who did a fantastic research job. I mean, his material is so well researched, full of documentation and signed by presidents and other various people, that actually shows a good deal of what I believe is the truth behind this. I think it's, we don't want to ever believe something, you know, airy-fairy and just because it's out there. We should look for truth and we should look for documentation of that truth. We should find extant evidence of that what we say is true. And Dr. Michael Sala has done a fantastic job in that respect with his books about Antarctica, the history of Antarctica, which I believe is one of the titles of his books. There are three books he wrote about that particular thing that tells it all.
Well, basically, in his book, he was saying that I was listening to a couple of his books that, and that William Tompkins, in his book, working with the extraterrestrials or chosen by the extraterrestrials, he's gone now, but he was saying the same thing about, as you were saying, as you said just a few minutes ago, that Michael Sala was a consummate, very credible individual in terms of the research he's done. But in the book, he was talking about Antarctica, that the Germans have been down there since World War II, and they have it took with them not only other ships, flying ships, but they took with them a lot of money and hundreds of thousands of people and put them into slave labor.
I have never been to Antarctica, much as I would love to, because I remember it before it had ice and snow, and it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of territory. And I only know about that from reading. I know about the ships. I know about the Pleiadians being here under the Antarctic, but I didn't know the whole story. Of course, I think anybody who's, you know, kept up reasonably with history knows that massive German armaments materials were moved down to first, I believe, Argentina, and somewhat to Brazil, and then down to Antarctica after World War II, along with many of their people. And I only know that they took all their slave labor from their factories with them since reading Dr. Sully's books. That's information that I know from his books. It's not information I know from Spirit. Okay. And it was not information I knew personally.
Okay. Well, from Spirit, and you say you were part of the Atlantis. What can you tell us about that whole Atlantis Antarctica situation? What can you say from Spirit?
Oh, well, of course, and what I know from my own memory, right, is that what is now Australia, Tasmania, New Zealand, Antarctica, that was Lemuria. At the time that what was then the Northern Hemisphere was Atlantis, The southern, the planet at that time was basically two halves, a massive landmass in the north, massive landmass in the south, and an ocean in between, going all the way around, that was not very deep. The ocean was not that deep. The whole area that is now Antarctica used to be Lemuria. They will, when the day comes that the ice melts, I'm sure they will find all the evidence of that ancient civilization. We used to go from Atlantis down to Lemuria, where they had all the great healing temples. It was amazing. What modern medicine is now getting ready to move into, and some doctors are already beginning to comprehend and expand, experiment with, is frequency medicine. Until you have the technological capability of measuring accurately the frequency of any, let's say, virus, right? And have also the capability and understanding of how to put that frequency into a living cell to kill off a virus, you are never actually going to cure many, many of the diseases, most of the diseases on the planet, because every disease is about a disturbed frequency of a cell. No matter, it doesn't matter what the disease is or what the cells are. For example, a liver vibrates, has a vibratory frequency of, let's say, a number 8, whatever the number is, right? But let's say a number 8, whereas the cancer in the liver has a frequency of a number 9. So until you can kill off the number 9 without demand and separate it from the number 8, you're not going to cure the cancer. So frequency medicine is the ultimate treatment for curing all diseases, coupled with things that help the body, which are actually things in nature. And in Lemuria, all these secrets were held. They were practiced on a daily basis. And it was all frequency medicine. And the principal frequency I used was full spectrum lighting, right? The pure light coming from the sun on a clear day with no interference, when you get that pure light coming in. And then it was refracted through glass, which had been colored using gold. It had been compounded with gold, which of course is an incorruptible metal. The colored glass had been made with gold, right? And when you put pure light through that in a fine beam, puts out a very specific frequency. And so by adjusting the colors, you change the frequency and you can heal the whole human body of just about anything. I mean, you can beam it on a broken leg and fix it in a few hours, because you're generating the healing. So this was practiced in Lemuria at the time of Atlantis. And it's gone, the whole Atlantis, Lemuria is gone. Antarctica's under tons of, 2 miles of ice or whatever it is. But all the evidence will be found when the ice melts. And they're probably accessing a lot of this evidence under the ice as we speak. It's probably not unknown to those people who are under there. I should think they're finding lost cities and all kinds of things, because it was a very populated area at one time.
Some of the people who have been visiting Antarctica have been like President Barack Obama, Vice President Biden, the Pope, Russian President Putin, former Secretary of State John Kerry, even astronaut Buzz Aldrin and members of the congressional delegation have been recently visiting there. So talk about energy that creates that will dispel any kind of diseases in the body. Did Tesla or Royal Rife do the same thing as they came along years ago?
Yes. The Rife machine was the first one to actually attempt to use frequency medicine. Yes. And in some cases it was successful. It just wasn't refined enough. And then there wasn't the technology there that is ultimately needed. But it's here now. In fact, ever since Earth humans were able to measure or map the human genome, the moment they could map the human genome, that meant that they were moving into the area technologically by their own brains, and this was important, to get into that level of medicine that they need to be in to start actually coming up with cures for diseases rather than treatments. You know, all the allopathic medicine out there today is primarily a treatment. There are very, very few diseases where you go to the doctor and he says, this is the treatment and you need to do it for a day or a week or a month and then you will be cured, right? What they actually talk about is treatments, ongoing treatments, and remissions. They almost never talk about cures. So there are a few things like they know that certain antibiotics will cure certain illnesses, certain diseases that you pick up, but they are mostly not too serious anyway, right? The serious diseases that haunt mankind are primarily something that we have developed in our system over hundreds, thousands of years, and they have become endemic. They are embedded into us. These things fail over and over and over again in humans. And we, of course, the big one is cancer. Cancer, heart disease, and these things we're not going to fix until we get frequency medicine.
But if you
there is some understanding that that is true, of course, when it comes to heart disease, because they actually introduce frequencies when they do there's a word for it, but it's just slipped my tongue. When you have atrial fibrillation and they do something, they put a frequency, a vibrational frequency, or what they term as an electrical charge, right, to stabilize the atrial fibrillation. Well, electricity and frequency, you're back here now to Rife and Tesla. Right, they were on the right track, and this is the way medicine is going, and it's probably going to take another 20, 30 years, but we will get there. We will get there. It is expanding knowledge, and it's going to be wonderful when it does get there. But of course, when you start to bring in frequency, then you're also bringing in spiritual matters. You're balancing spirit because spirit is energy and frequency is the manifestation of energy. So this process of learning for medicine to learn to cure people is also part of the learning curve, which requires the understanding that there is not just a physical body, but that body has a spiritual component and is in fact thing more than a vehicle to carry your eternal spirit. And this is where medicine is moving.
Okay. But wouldn't Big Pharm have a problem with that? Because
Absolutely. That's why they're so dangerous.
So they would stop a Royal Rife from operating or Tesla from disclosing that kind of information because it would interfere with their profit motive.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, but that's not going to be easily disrupted then. Big Pharma is not going to step aside. No?
No, but you see, they're not going to step aside. They're going to have to be beaten down with a big stick, right? But here is the wonder of it. When it was Rife and his machine, he was a one and only, right? So, you know, he was an extraordinary human being, but he was on his own. But now there are hundreds and thousands, and I dare say millions of practitioners in the field of medicine today, in the healing arts, right, who are naturopathic doctors or who are allopathic doctors who are choosing to follow a more holistic, homeopathic path to treating their patients. And so as this spreads, it won't be just one rife. It will be tens of thousands of rifes out there. And the big pharma can't fight everybody all the time. If they were so secure in their position, they wouldn't have to keep coming out with things to drug people. And they wouldn't have to be telling everybody every day, like this COVID thing, you need more and more and more boosters. Because that's how they are getting control of you. That's how they are controlling you. And so as time moves along, more individuals, okay, think of it this way. So far, in something that I read, I think it was something from the CDC, almost 70% of the global population has received one or more shots against COVID, vaccinations against COVID, 70% of the world's population. That's a huge majority, right? But that still also means 30% have not. Now, that's also a lot of people, an awful lot of people. What is 30% of today's population? It's nearly 3 billion people. Not million, billion. So,
yes.
So ultimately, you're going to have enough weight behind those who say, no more. We're not doing this anymore. We are tired of medical practice. Because who do they practice on? They practice on the patients, right? And do you really want all these people practicing on you?
True.
You know, we just need to start looking at the words that are used to describe things, and really pay attention.
Here's a big question. How was it that when we look at the smallpox, when we look at the big deal that they had in 1919 with all the, you know, the viruses and whatever, they were able to shut down the whole world. How do you do that? How do you shut the whole world down?
Well, that's what they did with COVID. You know, my question when COVID happened, right, when it happened, when we were told that we now had a global pandemic, my question was, who in the world is powerful enough? What person, single person, is powerful enough to pick up a telephone and shut down the whole world? If ever anybody who was a disbeliever didn't come wake up to the reality that there are certain people behind the scenes who nobody chose, nobody voted for, nobody picked, and they are there hidden behind everything with immense, unimaginable power over all our lives. The fact that this entire planet closed down in less than 10 days, that they had everybody closing their businesses, not going anywhere, staying in their houses, and putting masks on their faces. Who would have believed such a thing? But it happened. Even nations that were fighting with each other, still both sides did the same thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Totally different ideologies meant nothing when it came to whoever ordered the shutdown of this planet. And that should have been scared. That should have scared anybody. It certainly scared me, because their power is behind the scenes is so great that none of us have any recourse against it.
Didn't George Orwell talk about that some years ago, 1984,
Yeah, 1984, absolutely. Well, he was talking about, you know, the control mechanisms of communism. which is true. You know, find what the people fear and then use that fear against them. That was the idea behind that book. Find what people fear. Now, worldwide people fear of getting sick and possibly dying. That fear was enough to make them all put masks on, stay at home, shut their businesses, get into debt, lose their savings, total destruction. The people went along with it because they were afraid, not just because the government said it, but because they were afraid of disease. They were afraid of this killer disease, which in fact is no more lethal than a bad dose of the flu. You know, people die from it all the time. I'm sure the numbers were juggled. I'm absolutely sure the numbers were juggled. Every evidence suggests that they were not true. They were manipulated, but fair enough. They frightened people. They frightened people literally to death, to the death of their jobs and their homes and everything. And sadly, many people did get sick and did die. But the terrible thing is that the death rate is continuing to go up, not from COVID, but from the injections that were given to treat COVID. Look at all these young boys, healthy young kids coming down with heart disease. I mean, hundreds and thousands of teenage boys now suffering for the rest of their lives, however long their lives might be now, from heart disease as a direct result of the jab. Because what do these injections, one of the major side effects of these injections is organ failure. And typically you get the heart and you will also get the kidney. Someone quite close to me that I know very well, right, had a pancreatic failure, perfect, in good shape, in every other respect, and sudden pancreatic failure and dead in a few hours. So what's going on with this is serious. And it's interesting because we're not getting data on this from the pharmaceutical companies or the medical companies or the CDC. But we are getting data from the actuarial corporations that feed the insurance industry, because the insurance industry has to pay out death benefits to people with life insurance. And according to the insurance companies, from what I have read, the prime working years are calculated as age 19 to 49. And that last year, I think it was only in the last quarter of last year, 2021 definitely, the overall recorded deaths in that age group, 19 to 49, went up 40%.
Wow.
40% increase in overall.
That's a big number.
This is death from all sources where somebody has recorded a death. For any reason whatsoever, it doesn't matter what, they could have been hit by a truck. It doesn't matter what caused the death, it's recorded, right? And the actuarial people for the insurance companies look at those numbers to say, how much should we charge for life insurance? Basically, you know, what are the odds that we'll have to pay out and how much? And they have never seen anything like this before. It was first reported by a small insurance company out of, I think, Pennsylvania. And then the word went out and the other companies, the big companies, started looking at their figures. And I dare say you could go online and check this out for yourself. But previously, the most increase they had ever seen since they started recording these numbers way back in the 1800s was a 10% increase in overall deaths in that age group. And I believe it was in a polio outbreak sometime in the 1950s. And in that 1 year, there was a big uptick, a 10% uptick. They have never before seen anything like a 40% increase. It's unheard of.
As a nurse. Mm-hmm. What? And you were. Let's talk about that. You were a nurse some years ago.
In England, I'm a registered nurse in the UK. Yes.
All right. As a nurse, what would you suggest that people do who don't want to take the jab, as you indicated? Because go ahead.
A lot of people don't want to do it. Is that what you're saying? I didn't want to do it.
There are a number of people who refuse to take the jab, yes.
Yes, yes. I refuse.
What should they do?
This is my reasoning, and I have friends who are very much into naturopathic medicine. One expert who is a dear friend of mine who is so anti-vax, he's written papers on it, presented them nationally, and they've gone international. So he is firmly against any form of vaccination ever, right? But I am not. For myself personally, I am not an anti-vaxxer in that extreme. I have been vaccinated for polio. I've been vaccinated for diphtheria and what else? Several things, right? But the jab that we are getting, the so-called vaccination that I would get, say, from Pfizer, if I went to get it for COVID, is not the same as the ones that we used to have. Originally, and let's say prior to 1960, and I don't have a date on it, but let's just say that. Prior to 1960, when you got vaccinated for, say, diphtheria, right, or smallpox, right, you got a scratch in your skin or a needle stick, and what was put into your body was a very tiny, inert amount of the disease itself, so that your immune system recognized that disease as a foreign invader and went out and attacked it. And ever after, when you were exposed then to the disease of smallpox or the disease of diphtheria in the community, you would have an inbuilt mechanism to fight it off. So you would either never catch it or you would catch a very mild dose of it. That's the way a vaccine used to work. But these vaccines that they have developed now with these spike proteins are not that kind of thing at all. First of all, you don't know what's in them because they haven't told you. Only Moderna was forced to print its thing out, its recipe out. We have no idea what Pfizer is putting into their vaccines. But the other thing is that they've done them very quickly, made these things very fast. We don't know what's in them. And what we do know is that they are two things. We know they produce spike proteins. And apparently, and I don't understand the science of all this, but I have talked to some people who believe they do know the science, and I've certainly read a great deal about it. Once these spike proteins start multiplying in your body, they never stop, and they are, in fact, the cause of organ failure down the line. Now, that might not be as straight a shot as I'm trying to explain it, but it's in my simple mind, that's what they're telling me, right? And the other thing is, which is even more disturbing to me, they are using RNA as a messenger system, mRNA, and this alters your DNA. And I had a neighbor here where I live in Montana who was a nurse giving these shots to people. She was, I believe, in charge of our local program at one point. And she has since very wisely taken a sabbatical, I might add, after several talks with me, I think. But she insisted to me that using the mRNA messenger system in the body could never affect your DNA. It could not change your DNA. And she actually said to me, Gillian, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, at that point, I gave up. I thought, I'm wasting my time trying to talk to this lady because she's determined that she's right. But in fact, she was wrong. And as a nurse, as a registered nurse, she should have known better. Actually, in 1975, two scientists were awarded the Nobel Prize, medical prize, for discovering the fact that when you tinker with the RNA, using it as a messenger system, it alters the DNA. They actually awarded the Nobel Prize for that way back in 1975. So being out there now saying this system cannot affect your DNA is just a downright lie. And any scientist, if I, who am nothing more than a 30-year out-of-date nurse from England, knows that, don't tell me that these scientists today don't know it. I'm sure they do. And all those people out there giving these shots should also know it, because how can they be giving the required full disclosure to their patients about these shots if they don't even know those basic truths? So I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not on a crusade about this. And if I really believed that they had come out with a safe, harmless vaccine that would prevent me ever getting COVID, I would be the first in line to get it. But nothing that I know or have read or researched on this tells me that that's true. It's not true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, for the people who have taken the jab, as you call it, what would you suggest they do if you say that there would be repercussions coming down the pike?
There are many people out there who have taken it and they've since done their research and are now second guessing the value of it. But whether they believe it or not, you know, whether they believe in the jab or not, it is, I would suggest to anybody, find yourself wherever you live, excuse me, a really good naturopathic doctor. Because the naturopathic doctors, as my friend who is one here, they do have protocols available which mitigate the effects of the things that you have been given in the injections and can support the body and the body's own immune system to give you some protection. I don't know if there is any chelation-type therapy out there that can remove everything from your system. Maybe there is. I don't know that. But it's certainly well worth the time and trouble of anybody who has had any of the recent vaccines for COVID, just going to a naturopathic or a good herbalist and talking to them about it, asking their opinion, and asking what they can recommend.
All right. The other thing, too, along those lines, they said there's a gigantic battle going on in the vastness of the universe of who will be the rulers, the Greys, the Reptilians, the Nordics, the Palladians, and many other species are vying for dominance and control over who will be operating the planet Earth, if you will. Any comments on that?
Yes, I'll tell you. I'll tell you who's going to rule Earth. Earth is going to rule Earth. Earth humans are going to rule Earth. And the Anunnaki are returning to make sure that the Earth humans get the control back, because they're not ruling Earth right now. Those who are ruling Earth right now are like their paymasters, you might say, are maybe the Reptilians, the Pleiadians, there's a whole slew, as you rightly say, who are vying for control of the Earth. But the Anunnaki handed over control of this Earth to the people to whom it belongs, namely Earth humans, right? 5,000 years ago, roughly, maybe a little longer, right? And after a short period, they left them to it. Well, unfortunately, leaving Earth humans at that point in their history to govern their own planet was a disastrous mistake. It was like, you know, leaving children in a candy store. And all they do, all kids would do, would make, eat so many candy, they'd make themselves sick. Well, all Earth humans have done is get themselves in more and more trouble as the years have gone by. So now we see the mess that we're in. And we see that there is this obnoxious, really very dark rulership on the planet that is not the people chosen and elected by the people for the people in any sense of the word. It is indeed run by a few hundred families, powerful, wealthy people who are literally, I want to say, in cahoots with extraterrestrials who do not have Earth's best interests at heart. And those really, truly bad people who are working with the aliens, they're going to be destroyed. They're going to be taken down. One way or another, they are going to be taken down. And the Anunnaki will be returning very shortly, and they will make sure that the planet goes back into the hands of Earth humans.
When they
and
do return... Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Go on.
No, I got the question. You go right ahead.
Well, I was just saying they're not just doing it out of love for humanity. They are also doing it out of a sense of responsibility, because they were the ones who genetically altered the Earth humans in the first place and developed them in the way that they have developed. So they have a responsibility to put things right. And that's what they're coming to do, to put things right.
Okay. Well, they altered the gene. Go ahead. Talk about that. Why did they do that?
Well,
100,000 years ago. Why did they come to this planet
long,
to do that?
That engineering began 400,000 years ago. And specifically, I know it's at least 400,000 years. That's a fairly accurate time. When they built a series of laboratories in East Africa and started the genetic engineering. And originally, the original genetic engineering was done on animal species because the Anunnaki had come back to this planet to take the gold from it, which of course they knew was here because, hey, they were Atlanteans at one time. They know what's on the planet. After the huge explosion of Atlantis and other great cosmic events, the asteroid belt had formed, and it was not easy to come back to this planet. But eventually they got back, and they wanted the gold. They wanted the gold because their own atmosphere had problems, and they had this idea of suspending gold in the atmosphere as a protective field. The actual atmosphere of the Anunnaki crossing planet, the 12th planet, can be seen in the rings of Saturn. Each time they come past Saturn, those magnetic fields are so powerful, they pull off atmosphere, and that's how the Anunnaki got holes in their atmosphere in the first place. So they needed the gold to put in suspension to protect their planet. That was their scientist's plan. So they came to Earth to do that. And digging for gold, well, they didn't intend to dig for it originally. The Anunnaki are great submariners, right? Their planet is a water planet, lots and lots of water. They're great submariners. And they intended to take the gold out of the ocean, to simply filter it out. However, they had not been on the planet since the time of Atlantis. Now, I already mentioned earlier in our conversation that at the time of Atlantis, the oceans were not deep like they are now. They were relatively shallow. The Pacific, the area we think of as the Pacific Ocean, between, let's say, North Africa and across to South America, that was more like the Everglades. It was measured in feet, not fathoms, right? So they thought they could just come back and filter the gold out of the ocean. Turned out that was not the case. They were going to have to dig it out of the ground. They got fed up with digging it out of the ground. Their own workers absolutely refused to keep doing it. They used their military, right? Much like we use our military, you know, we send them off to to do the grunt work on projects. Like when there's an earthquake, we send in the Home Guard, the National Guard, to clean up the mess. Well, the Anunnaki did the same thing. They used their Ajiji, which was their basically their air force, to dig out the gold. But the guys in the Air Force eventually got fed up with doing that. They wouldn't do it anymore, and they went on strike. So the Lords and Masters said, okay, we will start an engineering, genetic engineering program, and we will take some of these local animals that we see about the place, you know, maybe like monkeys or something, and we will just tinker with them a bit and try and change them so that they can become workers for us. And one of the species they worked with were the cat species, the big cats, you know, lions, tigers, because of their digging ability, digging holes, and their strength, their muscular strength. So they just did many experiments, and there were some terrible disasters and some horrible mutations produced over a long, long period of time. Thousands of years these experiments went on. And eventually they said, okay, we really shouldn't be doing this, but we're left with no other option. We will have to take one of the hominid species that we see are already living in tribal situations. You had Cro-Magnon and Neanderthals running around the place at the time. And so they took a woman out of East Africa, and they took her eggs from her, and they fertilized them with their own male genes, male semen, and implanted these eggs into the nurses, actually, who were working in the laboratories. Some of the nurses volunteered to carry these hybrid children, and they impregnated them and produced the first hybrids. And it went on from there, this genetic engineering, this tinkering. And what they finally did was to take four genes from that female of the species, of the human species, and put two of their own genes in as a replacement to that. That was their final experiment, which produced modern man, Homo sapien, that we see today. That's how we became the species that we are today, from that. Otherwise, we would simply be advancing as Cro-Magnons or Neanderthals. Our development would have continued, but it would have been obviously at a much, much slower rate. We'd still be tribal.
Just as the Germans have used slave labor in Antarctica, the
right.
Anunnaki used slave labor to dig up the gold that they needed
correct.
For their own planet. Is that right?
That's quite correct.
So
they
slave labor
people.
Seems to be a thing in all of the universe. Would you say that?
Well, here is a thought. Right. There are several ways of looking at this. So let me just finish about these that the Anunnaki first developed. It was not their intention in the beginning to develop an entire race of beings. Their intention was to develop sufficient numbers of these genetically altered Earth humans to act as a slave labor force to dig the gold. They would have approximately around an 800-year lifespan of perfect health, and then they would come to the end of that time and they would just die, right? And they would be unable to reproduce themselves. That was the whole key, that they were essentially building a small army of beings and giving them the intelligence to be workers, right? That's all they were doing. They weren't setting them up to develop a species, right? They were taking a small group making them workers, let's say 1,000. Let's say they intended to create a small army of 1,000 people who were different from their original species. They'd been genetically altered. They would work for 800 years, by which time they'd have taken all the gold, and then they would die out as a species. They would be extinct. They would not continue. Was the original intention, the original plan of the Anunnaki? That was how it was supposed to be. And there would have been responsibility and karma to be paid because of taking actually those 1,000 potential humans and doing that with them, right? But it would have been a relatively, in terms of the whole cosmos of mistakes, it would have been a relatively small mistake, and reparation could have easily been made. But that's not what happened. One of their own actually did more tinkering than he was supposed to do with the genetic engineering. And as a result, he created a species that could sexually regenerate themselves, that could procreate, right? And in procreating, they spread the Anunnaki gene all over the planet. I mean, humans breed like crazy, you know, they're good at reproducing, right? And so this whole modern human, the Homo sapien, the modern human of what we are now, say, 300,000 years ago, that human escaped the confines of the gold mines, ran away, disappeared, went into the hinterlands, and bred with other people who were not genetically altered, but through that process of breeding, they spread those genes, those Anunnaki genes of intelligence everywhere. And so we had a planet now of modern Homo sapiens. That's how we came to be.
I see. So I think George, I'll just play this briefly and you can comment. When he was here, and you were married to George, and he really was really the consummate researcher on aliens and looking at the Greys and the Reptilians and the Nordics and the Palladians, he did a lot of writing. And for the people who want to get some of the works behind, they can always go to www.nohoax.net. Again, that's www.nohoax.net. But George was saying, I think in light of what you have just explained to us, that there's a fight for the soul of man.
I mean, that's got me in trouble in Billy.
I presume that you are not in a position to help us meet Billy.
No. Well, Billy doesn't want to meet anybody. You already met somebody.
My impression.
What's his name down at, supposedly his liaison might be.
Yeah, we did.
But I don't know if he'd help you or not either. But, you know, Billy.
No, I know Michael, you know.
Michael Horn?
Yeah, well, I know Michael.
You know, they got mad at
me.
He
tried, but we haven't.
No, I published the Talmud of Emmanuel over there, and they got all mad about that because I didn't put the German in it. Yeah, I don't know if you understand the original. When I got the Talmud, we had a college kid translated from that High German, that Schweizer Deutsch, into English. And my wife and I took the documents over. I mean, this is even more strange. We just took the documents over here, and we immediately, I sent out a whole bunch of copies to people. One of them was to a guy named, he's in California, I'm putting his name on that thing. Anyway, he reprinted it, and they changed some stuff around. And when he was channeling so-called Hatton, and the information we got was that was really good stuff. And I dropped $500,000 and got a divorce, actually about $1 million. And got a divorce over that thing because we thought they were really connected with, you know, that group, and it turned out to be a big swindle.
Oh, man.
Anyway, they published the Talmud, their version of it. Well, my wife and Jim Deardorff worked on it for 2 years. Well, now we got another problem that stepped in. That was my ex-wife. I've only been married a few months, just so you know. But my ex-wife and I, we spent 20 years running around the world, you know, playing the game, but when we met Billy over there, we kind of made agreements together. Well, what was the problem with the Talmud? That was the teachings of Emmanuel or Christ, right? Well, where did Christ go and where is he now? Well, we became in contact. Now that stops the whole story again, doesn't it? With
meaning,
the Christ being Emmanuel, who calls himself Sananda right now. Then we got the information on the translation of the Talmud, so then we did it, and we said, why do we want to put the German down? Because Billy wasn't responsible for that. That was the Greek priest, Rashid, who did the translation from Aramaic into Swissy Deutsch. There wasn't any copyright. It wasn't Billy's anyway in the first place. So what we did is then we were working on doing the translations. Then we were in contact directly with the Christ being energy. It's kind of like what I did, the Nostradamus material with Dolores Cannon. You familiar with her?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I didn't know you did that.
Dolores Cannon couldn't talk to anybody. She was stutterer all the time. And she sent me the manuscript. I so read the manuscript, and I told Desiree, I says, you know, this is pretty interesting. Let's check it out. So we made a contract. We published Dolores Cannon's first book, Conversation with Nostradamus, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I then set it up because we had a place in Beverly Hills. We got NBC and CBS to do our features on it.
So much of that material that he talks about can be found on the website that we talked about a few minutes ago, www.nohoax.net, nohoax.net. So I didn't want to take away, escape the subject of the Anunnaki, but I thought that Christ was an alien. I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, he's Anunnaki. They all are. Characters in the Old Testament of the Bible and the New Testament are the Anunnaki, and the Bible is largely a record of their time on Earth. They are the Elohim in the garden, the Yahweh, the Jehovah, all the characters in there. And, of course, the biblical King David is the one that I refer to as David. But in reality, he was Ningishida, the second son of the Enki, who came to Earth as the biblical King David in order to lay the foundation genetically for the birth of the Madonna, Mary, right, to be Christ's mother. So it's a long history in terms of Earth. It's, 1,500 years right there. But it's a very short history in terms of Anunnaki. It's less than a year, in 6 months of their time, right? So, yes, it is interesting. But, yes, all those characters in the Bible, I know them. Many of them I was with at the time, and I know the truth of the Bible, but it's the truth of the words that are said, as opposed to the way the religions have packaged it as a belief structure. There is a huge difference in a book. It's as if. Well, the Michael Sala books, right? I believe I told you one of my friends was a neighbor of Michael Sala and knew him and confirmed for me, what a wonderful researcher he was, and I've discovered that, right? But it's the difference between me saying, Michael Sala is a great researcher. I suggest you read his books if you want to know what's going on the planet with the aliens in Antarctica and the Fourth Reich, because that's all there, right? Or me saying that Michael Sala's word is a holy word sent down from the Almighty Creator, and you better believe every word of it, because if you don't, you'll go to hell, right? It's a vast difference. So do I respect the Bible and the teachings? Absolutely. Do I think there is truth in the Bible? Absolutely. Even though it has 412 translations, right? My preference is the King James Version, which is probably one of the worst ones for translation. But I enjoy the poetry of it. And the themes and the stories are correct. And the interesting thing is that there are hidden codes throughout that storytelling, as there are hidden messages in any good storytelling. We don't just take the surface of it. We look into it. Right now, there is a program on the History Channel. I think I actually saw it on Netflix. I think that's it, but it's a History Channel program. And it's called Noah, N-O-A-H, you know Noah? And
yes.
It's Noah Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, and Part 4. And in that, because the men who are explaining it are pretty, most of them, not all of them, most of them are pretty religious about it, a bit evangelical for my personal taste, right? But what they are telling about the timelines that they have traced through the Bible are so incredibly accurate information that I would recommend anybody to watch those programs. They are excellent. Excellent.
What program, is that?
It's on the History Channel, and it's called Noah.
N-O-H-N.
It's in four parts. And I think it's the second part that begins the real information. But they're excellent. Excellent four parts. And they bring the timeline right up to today, to today's point in history, as they are decoding it out of the Bible. It's fascinating. And true. I can vouch for the truth of it. I know it's true.
Your incarnations, how many have you had incarnations?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I obviously Atlantis was a very long one because I was Anunnaki. As Anunnaki, when I first came here, I was Anunnaki after I got lost and came back and was reborn into the Anunnaki. And that I came to Earth with them about 15,000 years ago, and I was killed about 5,000 years ago. So that was one part of a life, right? Just a single experience, single life. And then when I was killed down in Peru, since then I've had several, maybe, I don't know. I can think offhand of half a dozen or a dozen lives as an Earth human, reincarnational Earth human, traditional way that Earth humans do it all the time.
So what are you going to do now? When you plan on leaving again, and you're going to be reincarnated again?
No, I am, but not as an Earth human. I'm going back to being an Anunnaki human.
I'm not going
to do this again. Not this kind of
rebirth. Are you getting
again.
Tired? Are you getting worn out?
No, I'm just refusing. I'm just refusing. Well, I've already had enough. But the point is that it's not going to be the same for any Earth human in the future, because we are coming to the end of a cycle. You know, we measure cycles of experience by time, you know, like the Roaring Twenties or the post-war period or the pre-war period or the 60s. Or we always measure things by time. But also there is a time for development in any species. And that time seems to be, now I don't know if this is correct or not, this is just what I think, right? But on Earth, it seems to be that people reincarnating on Earth, along with Earth cycles, these cycles occur about every 50,000 years. So any soul experiencing on Earth, beginning at the beginning of a cycle, has 50,000 years in which to have many incarnations, many reincarnations, in order to learn whatever they wish to learn whilst they are attached to this planet. And these are the Earth humans who are beginning their life, their soul's experience here, and developing with the planet. And we're coming to the end of a cycle right now.
End of
2025 or the beginning of 2026. 25, 26. So right in there, astronomically, with the lineup of the planetary systems in the universe, astronomically, we come to the end of a cycle at that point in time. And this is a grand cycle. So this is the end of a time. This is the end of a time. And this particular time of roughly 5 or 6,000 years is the time in which man has, on Earth, Earthman, has had the opportunity to evolve as a species on Earth, the species being Earth human, right?
As we come to the end of the hour here, coming up on another couple of minutes here, but as the cycle concludes, what are you expecting in the beginning of the next cycle?
We were just talking about the Bible, and the Bible talks about the 3 days of darkness. Well, what you're actually looking at is the end of a cycle when the way time was measured during that cycle comes to an end, and there is a break in that space-time continuum, and then a new time starts up again. The clock starts ticking again, and you've got a new 50,000-year cycle rolling out in front of you in which to experience. And I am expecting that before we come to the end of this cycle, there may be a great deal of upheaval and unpleasantness on this planet. I don't know how we can avoid it, but I also know that what is coming will be absolutely magnificent. And you don't have to be anything super. You don't have to be a saint or a super being to step forward into the golden light that is coming. All you have to do is want to do it, to honor the creative source, whoever or whatever that is, because truthfully, nobody knows. You know, we call it God, and we throw the word God around quite happily, but nobody knows who or what God is. But we do know that there is something that is behind all this creation, that this creation is something in which we and the one participate, and that we're all part of it. There are no exclusions. There are no separations. We are all part of it, and we have, as a sentient species, we have the genes within us to move forward into the next creation, into the next evolutionary step, not to die with the second death of the material as we know it, but to move forward into the next experience, moving the soul forward, if you like. And this is choice. This is your choice. Do you want to hang on to the old and die with it when it withers away and dies because its time has run out? Or do you want to step forward into the new? It's a simple choice, really. And it is every being has the opportunity to choose to move forward. And it's magnificent. I strongly recommend it because it is wonderful. The planet right now is in a sorry state of wars and upheavals and political corruptions and lies and cheating. And we're all fed up with that. But it's coming to a short, sharp end. It will be torn down, and wonderful new things are coming, definitely.
Okay. You from time to time, talk to your guide, and what I'm reading, David is one of your guides, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
Okay. So the last time he spoke with you, he's saying that pretty soon there will be something that's dramatic.
Yes.
Coming to the planet Earth,
what he actually said to me, he said, we will not tell you any details of what it is because your thoughts are too powerful. You will interfere and change things, which sounds very like me putting too much thought into it. But he said, we can assure you that we are now 98.9% certain that events unfolding in August will change everything across the face of the planet. So we can expect exciting things happening in August. We will see the beginning of the end in August. So pay attention. Pay attention, everybody, to what is happening in August of this year, not some future date, August this year. And they don't often come in with dates. But when they do, like they came in, and I remember saying this to you at some point, Russell, they came in a long time ago and said, 2017, that will catastrophic events, you know, uptick in earthquakes, volcanoes, so on and so forth, hurricanes, you name it, because that was the nearest passive Nibiru to the planet in this orbit. And we saw that, you know, we had massive typhoon season, hurricane seasons. It was the beginning of this climb in these events. And it was triggered by the passing of the planet. Well, now they're coming and saying this August, and I have a feeling it will be around the third week in August, 18th, 20th, somewhere in there. That's the time frame I'm looking at.
Right.
So
this is the summer of great development then, huh? In August of 2022, something dramatic will be happening, huh?
Right. Really expect it. I will be very, very shocked if it doesn't happen.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, it's been great having you. We understand a little bit about the Anunnaki then, as you explained it. And the role that we should be playing is, what should we be doing as people who are hopeful that it becomes a better world? What should we be doing on a day-by-day basis?
Well, in the sense that we are the children of the Anunnaki, that makes us children of light, because the Anunnaki are beings of light, not physicality. And so let me just read to you what they had me write at the end of that little book I was telling you about. The Anunnaki return to teach love of oneself, love of each other, and above all, love of God. Right? That's what they came for. That's what they're coming back for. And that's what they want us to learn. Love ourselves, love each other, and love God. Because it is unconditional love that is the glue that holds this entire universe together. And we need to practice it. We need to become unconditional love.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you and taking time out from a busy day to help us to see things a little bit different. But some people who listen to this program won't believe any of what you said. Would you?
That's fine. That's fine.
And
you
that's
know,
okay, huh?
There is an old saying, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. And
okay.
We all learn things in different ways. We don't all learn the same ways. So what they may learn from me might be something quite different to what they learn from somebody else. It might be the same message, but they may hear it differently. And that's fine, too. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not asking everybody or anybody to believe me.
We all have to
find our own truth.
There are so many religions on the face of the earth, all created by man. And so it can be from the Catholic, the Protestant, the Methodist, the Episcopalian, you know, Seventh-day Adventist, on and on and on. It could be somewhat confusing after a while, would you say?
Yes, but, you know, it's that saying, two things. Remember these two sayings. There are all roads to Rome. Right, all roads lead to Rome, and like Christ said, in my Father's house are many mansions. Right. So those two statements really say it all. I don't care what road you travel down, or whether you do it smiling and happy or kicking and screaming, you will eventually come, or your soul will eventually come back to its ongoing union with the source, because the source never separates from you. You use your three-dimensional mind and brain to separate yourself from the source. But it's artificial. It's just something that you're creating. It's like I used to say about reincarnation when I did pluses. I will teach you about it. I'm not asking anybody to believe me, but I assure you, when you die, you will find the truth of what I'm saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs to believe it now, but down the line, they will find it's the truth. So never believe something just because you hear it or you read it or you see it. Investigate it. Think about it. Ask yourself, does it feel true to you? Does it resonate in your heart? Because eternity is with you. It's within you. You are your own eternity. One of the ways they describe the continuing consciousness is one of the ways to think of immortality. I know I'm an immortal being because I have continuing consciousness, because I can remember. I've never lost consciousness from one life to another.
Which is good.
Right?
Okay.
So that's just a way of describing immortality. So the thing you really need to get to know is yourself. Get to know yourself. And all these things like the teachings of Christ or Buddha or Kuan Yin or Confucius or any of the great teachers of history, these are only guideposts to show you the way to get to know yourself. And once you get to know yourself, then you recognize the oneness of everything. There is no separation of anything. There is a oneness of everything.
Okay.
I read a nice little thing. Just let me say this quick. I just read this just yesterday, I think, right? Somebody said this, that we say we are but a drop in the ocean, but what we should say is that we are the ocean in a drop.
I see.
And that is a magnificent, magnificent thing to think about.
Well, great. All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
We will see you again next time. How's that?
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure as always. Let's hope for good times for everybody. Thank you, Russ. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Thank you very much.